Hello, and welcome to Giant Ear. Giant Ear is a two-hour radio show created by Andrea Williams and curated by Edmund Mooney, and is a production of the New York Society for Acoustic Ecology. We are webcast every Sunday night from 7 to 9 on Free 103.9. We play interviews with sound artists and the local public, and all manner of field recordings and soundscape compositions from sound artists and designers, but also from anyone who can get their hands on a recording device and listen to the world around them. Tonight's show is dedicated to the soundscape of mundanity. According to Roget's new Millennium Thesaurus, some synonyms of the word mundane are banal, commonplace, day-to-day, earthly, everyday, humdrum, lowly, normal, prosaic, routine, workaday, worldly. Only one antonym is listed, extraordinary. What I found in thinking about the concept of mundanity is that it is amazingly subjective. What is banal and commonplace to one would be quite extraordinary to another. For someone living in Baghdad, the sound of bombs and automatic machine gun fire would be commonplace, while to someone in a small town in middle America with one homicide in the last 10 years, it would sound as if the world were ending. It's almost useless, then, as a category for sound or anything else for that matter. I decided I needed to get a wide array of different vantage points on this subject. The first half of the show is dedicated to documenting mundane audio snippets in New York and abroad. The second half of the show is dedicated to one particularly amazing soundscape, which I encountered in Nambucca, Australia, on vacation recently. Like I said, extraordinary beyond belief to me, but quite mundane to native Nambuccans. I was amazed, upon being there for 3 or 4 days, that I actually started to get used to it, and what had been extraordinary through repetition became mundane. Perhaps mundanity is the thing you've experienced so many times already you don't have to notice it anymore. Anyway, we have a wonderful array of mundane sounds for you, depending on where you come from, and a million other factors I won't go into. First up is a wonderful recording from Greg Hooper, who is a senior lecturer of communication and design and creative industries at Queensland University of Technology in Australia. He was vacationing in Brighton, England. It's a perfect example of the interesting subsiding into the mundane. Greg had this to say about his recording. Hi Edmund, I just sent you an MP3 called Brighton Bag Walk. Here's some information about it. It was recorded in November 2006 in Brighton, England. Brighton is a big tourist destination. Also, lots of European students go there to learn English. A very common sound and sight is people rolling their little suitcases along the footpaths. It was the same for us when we were there, up and down the street to the railway station. So that is what I recorded. Me rolling my suitcase along from the train station to home, all the way into the flat. It was recorded on mini-disc using a pair of mics attached to the suitcase. I had to put the mini-disc in my pocket, as it couldn't handle the vibration if put in the suitcase. Anyhow, I quite like the annoying, incessant intensity of this recording. Me too, Greg. Let's hear it.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Brighton Bagwalk from Greg Hooper. Up next are several mundane recordings from Mark Foxman under the title of the Yellow Medallion Tapes. A native of the West Village who was a New York City cab driver in the early 1980s, Mark informed me that he is currently working on a long-term exploration of nocturnal sound fields in northern New England. I love how through repetition and punctuation in these recordings, the seemingly endless variety of voices and conversations start to bleed into each other. I wish I had 2 hours of these. It would be a great meditation on the human animal. Let's give him a listen.
Where do you want to go?
Let's go to Orbeck.
All right, take us over to Orbeck, 34th.
Can you take me down to Greenwich Village, where the all the small restaurants are?
Oh, it's so cold out. I want to go to 541 Broadway, between Prince and Spring. Oh.
So go ahead, let's see, what does Siegfried have to say? That's the name of Rothenberg's lawyer.
Oh, we're just straight ahead to Cuba.
Can you take me to 150th on Broadway?
47th 9th Avenue on the left-hand side, please.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's real. At 23rd and 7th, please.
I'm actually going uptown, but there was a traffic jam on that street. I'm going to West 52nd Street, please.
Could you take me $2 north until the meter hits $2?
LaGuardia, Eastern Shuttle.
51st between Broadway and 8th, please.
Si, El 94 on Broadway.
I thought it was a very strong play.
Yeah, it was.
That's a tough play to do. I mean, the first act I thought he was a little weak, that guy. But the second act was quite strong.
Yeah.
25th and 2nd, on the right side, and then hold your flag.
Oh, God, it's cold. 35th, please. Yeah. 18th Street and 20th Avenue.
Between 9th and 10th on 57th.
I've had a beautiful time.
I'm so delighted to see you again, Edna and Sheila, naturally.
Yes.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
I'm seeing you soon.
I hope so. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our first stop is 3rd Avenue and 57th, and then Sutton Place in 57th.
So you've gone too far, driver. Right back there.
444.
That's right.
Okay.
How much is that,
driver?
280.
To Grand Central, please.
Just a stroke this time.
Go straight up 10th and turn in just before 65th Street, the underground entrance of the Metropolitan Opera.
Jefferson
Street.
And Jefferson?
Yes.
I have to go to Central Park West
at
82nd.
It's
right here.
Up 10th
Avenue, going to
116th
Street, Manhattan.
We're going to, what is it,
34th?
Macy's, please.
28th Broadway, please.
Hello. Listen, I'm going downtown to Madison Street.
Madison.
If you don't mind, from Madison Street, I'll only be like a minute, and I'm going to Christie and Grant. Okay? That'll be a nice tip.
I gotta go as fast as possible to 73rd and Park Avenue.
135th and Broadway.
What is that, East Chester Road? What is that?
East Chester.
Thank you. Into Queens, please, on Regal Park. I'm just right off Queens Boulevard. I'm not far into the boondocks. Okay?
Take me to Penn and Building, go in the middle lane.
2310 48th Avenue, that's out in Woodside.
We want to go, I have to look it up. Do you know the theater, the best little whorehouse in Texas?
Hello. I'm going to, 56th
lo quieres que sepa.
Forty-fifth Street West.
Okay, whereabouts?
Huh?
No, 45th and what? You know, 8th Avenue, 9th Avenue.
Oh,
Fifth
Avenue. Fifth or Avenue of the America, in between.
Oh, between 5th and 6th? On 45th.
Between 5th and
the Avenue of America.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that was two excerpts from the infinitely interesting to me, mundane to a hack, Yellow Medallion tapes from Mark Foxman. Up next are a series of recordings from Johnny Farrow. I have to say before playing these that Johnny creates some of the loudest recordings I've ever heard. I think it was John Cage who said of Lamont Young's late 60s happenings that they recalibrated what loud meant for him. Johnny's recordings do that for me. Anyway, Johnny submitted three recordings. The first is a cab ride Johnny recorded, which is a nice bookend to Mark's recordings called The Ride. This is an average New York City cab ride, according to Johnny. After that, there will be New York City Marathon. City Road crew preparing 4th Avenue for the runners. For some reason, they would start the jackhammers at 11 p.m. I live on 4th Avenue. After that will be Praise Him. It was recorded inside a musically important Manhattan Episcopal church. It is congregation singing, and at times features a very bad soloist.
Left side, please. Yes, it's great. 11 and receipt, please. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay, those were selections from Johnny Farrow. Up next, we have two extremely mundane soundscapes if you're from Vietnam or Greenpoint, Brooklyn. First is a recording I made inside the triple-decker diner on Manhattan Avenue while having a bagel and coffee. I edited out the chewing sounds. Following that, we have a recording by Cedric Perrinet, recorded in Hanoi in the court of an apartment building in 2004, and that is courtesy of Cedric himself and the Free Sound Project, both of which you will hear more about later on in the show. So here we go.
Para que se vea que Yeah,
Did I get a check?
Are you ready to order?
Bye.
Her next section has to do with the definition of mundane in the Oxford English Dictionary. According to the OED, mundane is belonging to this world, i.e. the earth, as contrasted with heaven. There's a wonderful book by Alan Corbin called Village Bells, which analyzes the history and function of church bells in rural French countryside in the 19th century. I'll read an excerpt now which describes how church bells could define the world of each village, town, or city. Chapter 4, The Auditory Markers of the Village. Bell, space, and territory. Center and boundary. The emotional impact of a bell helped create a territorial identity for individuals living always in a range of its sound. When they heard it ringing, villagers, townsfolk, and those in the trades in the centers of ancient towns experienced a sense of being rooted in space that the nascent urban proletariat lacked. The bell tower prescribed an auditory space that corresponded to a particular notion of territoriality, one obsessed with mutual acquaintance. The bell reinforced divisions between an inside and an outside. This auditory space is not much affected by the acceleration that swept the 19th century along and entails no tendency toward mobility and speed. Listening to a bell conjures up a space that is, by its nature, slow, prone to conserve what lies within it, and redolent of a world in which walking was the chief mode of locomotion. Such a sound is attuned to the quiet tread of a peasant. The territory circumscribed by the sound of the bell obeyed the classical code of the beautiful, the schema of cradle, nest, and cell. It was an enclosed space structured by the sound emanating from its center. The bell tower was supposed to be situated in the middle of its auditory territory. The range of a bell, inscribed in a classical perspective of harmony, served to define a territory that was haunted by the notion of limits as well as the threat of their being transgressed. The crucial functions of the bell tower were to raise the alarm and ensure the preservation of the community. A sort of correlation was thereby established between bell and boundary, and between bell ringing and processions. Both served to define a space with readily perceptible limits. Another correlation thereby arose between the loudness of a bell and the extent of a parish or commune's territory. It was important to ensure that no part of that territory remained obdurately deaf to public announcements, alarms, or commands, and that there were no fragments of isolated space in which the auditory identity was ill-defined and threatened to impede rapid assembly. Bells shaped the habitus of a community, or if you will, its culture of the senses. They served to anchor localism, imparting depth to the desire for rootedness and offering the peace of near, well-defined horizons. In the 19th century, at least in the countryside, bell ringing defined a space within which only fragmented, discontinuous noises were heard, none of which could really vie with the bell tower. After all, there were as yet no airplanes, which nowadays are capable of competing with, overwhelming, and above all, neutralizing the sound of bells. Aerial sounds have been desacralized. Since the dawn of the 20th century, bell and cannon have ceased to be the sole rivals of the mighty thunderbolt. The continuous noise of the internal combustion engine, electric motor, or amplifier were also unknown. People liked, therefore, being sporadically deafened, primarily by the ringing of bells, but also by the sound of cannon being fired or the explosion of firecrackers, all of which were regarded as indispensable complements to public rejoicing. The charivari, or rough music we tend to regard as unwelcome disturbance, was all the more appreciated for its breaching of a habitual silence and for its links with the structure of the auditory landscape. A bell was supposed to be audible everywhere within the bounds of a specified territory. As we have seen earlier, this implied adjusting the loudness of the ring of the bell so that it could cover the surface area of the parish or commune and surmount any obstacles in the terrain. We have found, Remy Carr noted in 1757, that bells may be heard further on the plains than in the mountains, and that bells in the valleys may be heard still further than those on the plains. A mountainous terrain called for both a loud bell and early announcements. The 1837 regulation stipulated that in the valleys of the Pyrenees, the offices might be rung a full hour before the service was due to start. The 1885 regulation deemed even this advance not sufficient in the Haute-Savoie. One of the functions of a bell was to orient travelers or navigators within the space covered by its sound. Local customs, as much in the mountains as in coastal areas, but also in hilly regions on the fringes of forests and sometimes even in flat country, bear traces of the protection offered by such instruments. the monks of Grand Saint Bernard used a bell located 40 minutes from the monastery that rang to orient straying travelers. In the mountains of Auvergne, it is the custom to ring the bells from 5 to 6 o'clock in the evening and until 11 o'clock at night, whenever the countryside is covered in snow. The bell in Aubrac rang every evening for the same reason. In some communes of the Poix de Dôme, the Angelus is rung at 8 in the evening for a long time. In the canton of Saint-Brieuc, the bell began ringing at 10 o'clock at night in winter for the same reason. This practice was also followed at Haudricourt, a wooded, very hilly commune. Likewise, the mayors of the Meuse, who had refused the prefect's request made in 1852 to ring at 10 o'clock on summer evenings, acknowledged that it was useful in winter to let the bell be heard at 9 o'clock to reorient travelers who had lost their way in the forest. That was excerpts from Alan Corbin's Village Bells. Now let's hear some actual village bells from France, from Cédric Perronet. I downloaded these recordings from a website called the Free Sound Project. That's http://freesound.iua.upf.edu. The Free Sound Project is a collaborative database of Creative Commons licensed sounds. Free Sound focuses only on sound, not songs. It's a wonderful archive of sounds that people have made available through Creative Commons licenses. The stipulations are that if you use them, you need to cite them as the creator wants you to cite them and give proper credit. In that respect, I will read Cedric's writings about his recordings. Cédric Perronet is a French sound sculptor also working under the name of Toy.Bizarre. Since 1985, on field recordings, phonography, soundscape, sound art, acoustic ecology, and on the principles of acousmatic, electroacoustic, concrete, experimental music, and tries to manage the antagonism between all of these concepts. The first recording, 9 a.m., church bells in a small village on the banks of the River Aisne, France, July 2005. Stereo recorded with a couple of Sennheiser MKH-40 cardioid mics. PSP 2 preamplifier and Sharp MD recorder. The second recording is recorded 1508-2004 around 10 a.m. walking around Saint-Étienne Cathedral, Limoges, France. Some information about the place here. www.musimem.com/limoges.htm. The sound changes as I move. It is intentional. You can clearly hear from time to time the bell's percussive sounds or the resonance drone, depending where I was at the moment, near the cathedral wall, in the cathedral garden, etc. Please use headphones. This is a binaural recording. You should be able to feel my head movements since microphones were worn on my head. A stereo binaural sonic studio microphones were worn, and a Sony DAT recorder was used. Let's listen. Okay, those were two recordings of Church Bells in the French Countryside by Cedric Perronet. The second half of the show is dedicated to an incredibly exotic soundscape I recently experienced on the east coast of Australia in Nambucca. My fiancé's mother owns a house there on the edge of the wetlands nature preserve. Her backyard is actually protected wetlands, and it was a 10-minute walk to the most pristine, undeveloped mile of beach, I think, anywhere in the world. The incredibly natural soundscape was amazingly rich and diverse and constantly changing throughout the day. I never dreamt I would be able to hear it without a sense of wonder, but as I stayed there day after day, a subtle transformation began to occur. I was no longer being woken up at 4 in the morning by the impossibly loud kookaburras. The millions of tree frogs were not keeping me awake at night. I was adjusted to the oral environment. When we left to come back to the States, we couldn't readjust to the time difference. We were waking up at 4 in the morning, and we couldn't go to sleep, even though we were exhausted. The only thing that lulled us to sleep seemed to correct for our place shock were these recordings I had made of the different times of day. We had adjusted to the exotic so completely, mundanitized, if you will, our surroundings, to such a degree that we couldn't readjust without some aspect of the exotic being there with us. This experience is what inspired this show. Please see if you can imagine getting used to this. First I'll play 4 a.m., then 9 p.m., and then 10 a.m., which is a walk to the beach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that does it for this month's show, and please listen to next month's show, which will be hosted and curated by Andrea Williams, and it's on hybrids, mice with 1% human brain tissue, hybrid cars, hybrid food, feral cows, schnoodles, manticores, and nephilims, and wheat. And that'll involve a lot of interesting recordings, I'm sure, and a lot of other stuff you can't possibly imagine. So please tune in, and tune in every week from 7 to 9 on Sunday evening for Giant Ear. I've been your host, Edwin Mooney, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.